I mean, trying to chisel that stuff off. The saint's body had now been brought back with honor to his cathedral, and in a kind of public display of amends for the crime of the Emperor Arcadius in banishing him, his son Theodosius II knelt before the coffin and kissed it. And between Rome and all the major sees of the East, there was communion and peace. The new troubles came then, as it were, out of a blue sky. Alexandria and Constantinople had long made their peace with Rome. And when Atticus died in 424, the bishop at Constantinople, the new bishop, an elderly civil servant, managed the affairs of the turbulent capital so as to please all parties, his clergy, the monks, and the court. But with the appointment of Nestorius as his successor, in April 428, the peace was suddenly and very rudely broken. Like St. John Chrysostom, the new bishop, Nestorius, was a monk from Antioch. Keep coming back to Antioch, don't we? There, he too had been a famous preacher whose appointed task was the public explanation of the Scriptures. And he began his new career with a great oration in which he called on the emperor to root out the remnants of the many heresies, pockets of which still existed in Constantinople. In the new controversy which this sermon heralded, the natural characters of Nestorius and Cyril of Alexandria play a great part. As the natural characters of Jerry the Fault Bad and Jimmy the Little play a great part in the current controversy. I wonder where Jimmy the Mouth went, the swaggering one. Jimmy the Jerk. Swagger, Mouth, Jerk, they're all synonyms for him. Maybe I should call him Jimmy the Posturer. And once in a while, when I'm moving real fast, I'd stumble over the letters and it'd come out. Derriere. Posturer. The singing posture. Out of the blue sky, troubles came to the church. I'm reading from The Church in Crisis, a history of the General Councils from 325 to 1870 by Philip Hughes. Alexandria and Constantinople had long made their peace with Rome. And when Atticus died in 424, the new bishop, an elderly civil servant, managed the affairs of the turbulent capital so as to please all parties, his clergy, the monks, and the court. But with the appointment of Nestorius as his successor in April 428, the peace was suddenly and very rudely broken. The new bishop was a monk from Antioch. There he, too, like St. John Chrysostom, had been a famous preacher. And he began his new career with a great oration in which he called on the emperor to root out the remnants of the many heresies, pockets of which still existed in Constantinople. In the new controversy which this sermon heralded, the natural characters of Nestorius, new bishop of Constantinople, and of Cyril of Alexandria, we got a hint of it when he first said he wouldn't put John on the diptychs list, it'd be like rejoining Judas to the apostles. And their natural characters play a great part. Not more so, perhaps, than the personalities of such chiefs always play. But for once, we're well supplied with evidence about this. At the precise point on which Nestorius soon fell foul of all his world, he is himself our earliest witness in two letters to the Pope Celestine I, written in the early months of his administration. He is explaining to the Pope the difficulties he has to face in his war against the heretics. And he proceeds to say that one very serious matter is the unconscious heresy of good Catholics, of monks, and even some of his clergy about the meaning of the belief that Christ is God. They are confused in their mind about the great mystery that Christ is both God and man, and they speak as though what is human in Christ was divine. They talk, for example, of God having been born, of God being buried, and invoke the Most Holy Virgin Mary as the God-bringing forth, the Mother of God, using the Greek word that expresses this so succinctly, Theotokos. They should, of course, be more carefully said in their speech and say she is Christotokos, the one who brought forth Christ, the Mother of Christ. The Virgin, he told the Pope, is certainly Christotokos, or Christotokos. She is not Theotokos. She's Christotokos, not Godotokos. In speaking and acting as they do, these Catholics are reviving, says Nestorius, the corruption of Arius and Apollinaris, heretics notoriously condemned long ago. And Nestorius speaks feelingly of the fight which I have to put up over this. By the time Nestorius had written these letters, his public support of preachers, whom he brought in to correct his ignorant clergy, and his sermons, his prohibition of the use of the word Theotokos, and the punishments he meted out to the disobedient, had set the capital in an uproar. And the troubles were crossing the seas. For the news of his ill treatment of the monks had spread to the land which was the center of the monastic movement, Egypt. And when the Egyptian monks laid the theological problem before their bishop, and you are smart church historians now, you know why that Egypt in the Christian church was the center of the monks. Because the first Christian church was the therapeutic. They laid the theological problem before their bishop Cyril. The accusation that the traditional Catholic piety toward the God-man and his mother was heretical. There entered the field the very unusual combination of a first-rate theologian who was also a finished man of affairs and an experienced politician. Cyril wrote, for his monks, a theological defense of the tradition, which was necessarily a severe denunciation of Nestorius. This was sometime after Easter, 429. And the reply of Cyril to Nestorius' charges was presently circulating in Constantinople. And Cyril also wrote to Nestorius. He said, I don't have a jet like my brother Jerry, but I can write you. In the events of the next 2 years, the natural man in Cyril was to reveal itself fairly often. What of the same in Nestorius? What was it that so suddenly moved him to attack what was not a local piety peculiar to the city where he had just begun to live, but as the event showed, and as Nestorius must have known, a general traditional way of regarding this doctrine? His own first letters on the subject are a curious mixture of orthodoxy and of novel statements startling to pious ears. As the latter day would have said, statements capable indeed of being explained as in harmony with the tradition, but until so explained, and especially when set out in criticism of current practice, justifiably caused real suspicion that the speaker was himself a heretic. A man, that is to say, out to propagate a new personal anti-traditional version of fundamental belief. An independent Baptist can't put up with that. What prompted all this? The vanity of the learned man who had found out something the generality do not know. Is that it? The possession of key knowledge that will make all the difference? Is that it? The desire of a gifted man promoted suddenly from obscurity to one of the highest places in the world of his time to make his mark, to set all things right? From Nestorius' point that although Theotokos rightly understood as perfectly orthodox, it is better to use his own new word, Christotokos, the suitable place to air this, the first time might have been a conference of theologians or bishops. But Nestorius could not avoid the temptation to tell all on Nightline. Nestorius chose to do it in sermons to the multitudes that filled his cathedral. And not in terms of learned, anxious speculation, but in blood and thunder denunciation of universally practiced piety. There is a levity about the action which, given the gravity of the issue, is itself surely scandalous. Was Nestorius a really honest, straightforward type? In his first correspondence with the Pope, when he tells of his problem with Pelagian refugees from Italy, he is even naively devious. And the Pope, in his reply, points this out very bluntly. And once the major forces had been brought against him, Cyril of Alexandria and the verdict of Rome, he certainly shows himself in his maneuvers with the court, a twister of the first order. When Cyril wrote directly to Nestorius in February 430, now, you know, this started way back in 381. And the real fight here started sometime after Easter 429. When Cyril wrote directly to Nestorius in February 430, that's almost a year later. These things do string out. Seemingly, he said how surprised he was that he should disturb the peace of mind of the faithful by such very controvertible statements. Cyril is saying, don't bring these things out and air them in public. Nestorius, in return, attacked the explanation Cyril had given the monks, calling it untraditional, and said explicitly that it was the Apollinarian heresy all over again. Cyril had given him the news that Rome considered his views scandalous. Jerry told him that Springfield considered him unfit for the ministry. And Jimmy ended his letter with a hint that the people were on his side. You got an ability to figure when I leave the text, don't you? Cyril had given him the news that Rome considered his views scandalous, and Nestorius ended his letter with a hint that the court was on his side. Cyril was not unaware that at Constantinople there were clerics from Egypt gone there with a case against their chief bishop, and that Nestorius was taking care of these enemies. It was with reference to this situation that Cyril wrote to his agents in the capital about this time, quote, "This poor fellow does not imagine, surely, that I'm going to allow myself to be judged by him, whoever the accusers are that he can stir up against me. It'll be the other way around. I shall know well enough how to force him back to the defensive." The temperature is rising rapidly now on both shores of the Mediterranean. This has gone on 49 years. And it's only the current fight at the opening of the 5th century. And the church is still here. Only to Jimmy Swaggart and Jimmy Baker and Jerry Falwell is their importance such in their eyes that the whole church is going to be affected by what they do. They're not even a good big spit in a hurricane. Church has survived this kind of stuff. And that's the point for reading this to you. It was now, after the temperature was rising on both shores of the Mediterranean, it was now that Cyril first approached the court on the matter of Nestorius, sending explanations of the point at issue to the emperor, his wife, and sisters. The next move was a council in Egypt sometime after Easter 430. An elaborate report to the Pope on the part of Cyril is answer to the Roman query whether certain sermons that have come to the Pope were really Nestorius' sermons. Cyril's reply was a skillfully written letter describing the situation at Constantinople, saying that all the bishops of the East are united in their anxiety about these errors of Nestorius. He is quite isolated in his denial that the Virgin is Theotokos, but flatters himself that he will bring the rest around, so greatly has the power of his see infatuated him. The bishops will not publicly break off relations with Nestorius without consulting the Pope. Deign them to make known to us what seems good to you, Cyril said to the Pope, and whether we ought either to remain in communion with him or to declare publicly that no one should remain in communion with a man who thinks and teaches so erroneously. The Pope's reply, Cyril recommends, should be sent to all the bishops of the East. With this letter went copies of Nestorius' sermons and a Latin translation of them, then the Cyril-Nestorius correspondence, then a list drawn up by Cyril of the errors said to be taught by Nestorius, and a compendium of texts from the classic theologians of the past on the doctrine called in question. When this dossier reached Rome, Pope Celestine set it before a specially summoned gathering of bishops, and on August 11th, 430, out of the general blue and marble headquarters in Springfield, he wrote his judgment. This he sent, in the first place, to Cyril. In this letter, the Pope speaks of Cyril's communication as a consolation amid his grief at the sermons Nestorius had been preaching. He was so grieved at Nestorius that when Cyril sent him the information that he could kill him with, it was such a consolation. Yet they all prayed for Brother Nestorius' soul. They loved him. As much as I love you, Nestor, I would be doing a disservice to the church at large. This letter from the Pope that went first to Cyril speaks of the Pope's feelings about Cyril's communication as a consolation amid his, the Pope's, grief at the sermons Nestorius had been preaching. Already, that is, before receiving Cyril's letter, the Pope had handed over these sermons to one of the great scholars of the day, the bilingual John Cassian, to be the basis of a book against Nestorius. But Cyril's letter, the Pope continues, suggests how to cure this terrible evil. To the question about remaining in communion with the Bishop of Constantinople, the Pope replies that those whom Nestorius has excommunicated because they opposed him remain, nevertheless, in full communion. And those who obstinately follow the path that leads away from the apostolic teaching, which they claimed their teaching to be, cannot be in communion with us. That is the Pope. Nestorius, he instructs Cyril, is to be summoned to make a written recantation of his errors and to declare that his belief about the birth of Christ is what the Church of Rome believes, the Church of Alexandria, and the Universal Church. Of course, the Universal Church is those that agree with Rome and Alexandria. and Cyril is charged with the execution of this decision. He is to act in the Pope's place, and speaking with all the authority of the Pope's see, is to demand this retraction of Nestorius to be made in writing within 10 days of the notice given. If within this time Nestorius is not complied, he is to be declared expelled from the church. Jimmy is to go to Springfield in 10 days. Of course, he didn't go, so he got expelled. To the bishops of Antioch, Jerusalem, Thessalonica, and Philippi, the Pope also wrote letters which follow the same line as that to Cyril, but make no mention of the commission to act which the Pope had sent to Cyril. The Pope merely says with great gravity, quote, "The sentence we pronounce, which is even more the sentence of our Master Christ, who is God, is," and so on and on is the letter to Cyril. We possess, it's available in archives, besides the letter to Cyril, the letter which the Pope wrote that same day to Nestorius. And this, Pope Celestine explains that lack of scholars who could translate the bishop's letters and sermons had delayed his reply. Then came the dossier sent from Alexandria, which has been studied. The Pope tells the Bishop of Constantinople that his letters are full of evident blasphemies. I said, Nestor, the sermons, for all their obscurity, plainly teach heresy, the Pope says. What a dreadful mistake it was to make Nestorius a bishop. The sheep have indeed been handed over to the wolf. And now those whose lack of foresight brought this about are calling on the Pope to help them out of the difficulty. The Pope does not point out to Nestorius the particular places where he's gone astray. List any of your, quote, "many impious declarations which the whole church rejects," end quote. But as the Pope tells Nestorius, this present letter is a final warning. The Bishop of Alexandria is in the right in this controversy. He says, quote, "Brother, if you wish to be with us, openly show that you think as we think. Our sentence is this," he says, and the letter ends with a demand for a written declaration that Nestorius believes the very thing he has repudiated, with a notice of 10 days allowed and a warning that noncompliance means his immediate excommunication. Can you see this every night on Nightline? Nightline in Rome and Alexandria and Constantinople. And Ted Koppelin. Celestine then tells him that all the papers concerning the process have been sent to Alexandria, and that he has commissioned Cyril to act in his name and to inform him, Nestorius, and the other bishops what the Pope has decided. A letter in much the same terms also went from the Pope to the clergy and faithful people of the capital. But the Pope did not write to the emperor. What the normal time was for a public letter to go from Rome to Alexandria in the 5th century and thence on to Constantinople, a business involving sea journeys of something like 1,000 miles, is not easy to say. But it is surprising that not until December 7th was Nestorius officially summoned by Cyril to recant. And the Bishop of Alexandria did not carry out his task in person, as presumably the Pope designed. He sent the ultimatum before of his suffragan bishops, his appointees. Nor did he content himself with sending the Pope's letter of commission, his own credentials in the matter. Before moving, he had called a synod of the bishops of Egypt, and he now sent on to Nestorius their synodal letter condemning his teaching. Finally, to make the expected retraction doubly sure, Cyril had drafted 12 statements about the heresies Nestorius was alleged to support, statements all of which ended, quote, "Whoever believes this, may he be anathema." These Nestorius was to sign. But in the long interval between, and of course, Nestorius was the sign. Now, Gutman or Gutman, Dippy DeMoss, and a couple other hoods. Now, of course, Nestorina Fay told Nestorius not to sign it. But in the long interval, I'm boring you, between August 11th and December 7th, much had happened at Constantinople and elsewhere. Nestorius had had a correspondence with the Bishop of Antioch, who urged him in very plain language to do as he was asked and not to cause trouble merely about a word he disliked, Theotokos, but which he admitted could bear an orthodox meaning and to which many saints and doctors of the past had given sanction to themselves using it. I mean, call up Jerry the Fat, Jimmy. He won't know the difference, and say, I'm not what you've accused me of. I am a saint of the Nicene breed. I'm just merely a homoousion. Don't falsely accuse me. That ought to rattle Jerry the Fat's teeth, the resurrect homoousion from the Nicene Creed. I bet you catch Jerry the Fat when he first wakes up and try that on him. And he'll have himself a fundamentalist fit. I wonder if Jerry the Fat realizes there's a homoousion lurking in his creed. You think he knows that? Don't cause trouble merely about a word you dislike, Nestorius, which word you've admitted can bear an orthodox meaning, and to which many saints and doctors of the past have given sanction to themselves using it. Don't lose your head, wrote the Antiochian. 10 days. It will not take you 24 hours to give the needed answer. Ask advice of men you can trust. Ask them to tell you the facts, not just what they think will please you. You have the whole of the East against you as well as Egypt. Nestorius, in his reply to this surely good friend, hedged. He gave no explicit answer, merely saying he had not been rightly understood. That if his book forbade the use of the famous word, it was because heretics were using it with a heretical meaning. And that now he'll just wait for the council which will settle this and all other problems. As to Cyril, it is he who is the troublemaker, he said. As to the Egyptians' insolence, it will scarcely surprise you, for you have many evidences of it, old and new. On November 19th, the emperor had summoned the general council of the church. For certain vaguely described purposes, the summons said, but actually no one doubted it was summoned to settle this controversy between Constantinople and Alexandria, and in the expectancy of Nestorius to be the scene for the trial of heresy, Apollinarianism of Cyril. The council was to meet at Ephesus at Pentecost, June 7th, 431, and the Donnybrook started. Oh, they really had these councils for high, non-subjective, God-ordained purposes. And it was always a very godly emperor who paused in his orgies long enough to send the message of divine call. Am I boring you? And yet the church survived. We're still here. I really think Jerry the Fat, Jimmy the Jerk, and Jimmy the Little will not bring it down either. You want me to continue? St. Joseph, Missouri. I enjoy the plain talk over the TV. I'm an ex-religion teacher at Missouri State. Please tell him that Bishop Cyril had Hypera, the librarian at the Library of Alexandria, murdered because he was jealous of her knowledge. Well, that's par for those preachers, of course.
This is the end of Side 3. For the rest of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side four. Thank you.